news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
On this vote, the yeas are 56, the nays are 44, and pursuant to S-Res 47, the Senate having voted in the affirmative on the foregoing question, the Senate shall proceed with the trial as provided under the provisions of that resolution.
And with that, the first day of the first ever second impeachment trial of a president that began Tuesday ended with a divided Senate voting to proceed with the trial. Six Republicans joined the Democrats in rejecting the argument that this trial was unconstitutional. That's one more than the first time they voted on this just days ago. Which senator changed their mind? That would be Bill Cassidy of Louisiana.
The House managers were focused. They were organized. They relied upon both precedent, the Constitution, and legal scholars. They made a compelling argument. President Trump's team were disorganized. They did everything they could but to talk about the question at hand. And when they talked about it, they kind of glided over it, almost as if they were embarrassed of their arguments. Now, if I'm an impartial juror, and one side's doing a great job, and the other side's doing a terrible job on the issue at hand, as an impartial juror, I'm going to vote for the side that did the good job.
Well, he does have a point. The House managers, led by Congressman Jamie Raskin of Maryland, opened with a devastating 13-minute-long video montage showing the timeline of the January 6th insurrection that Trump is charged with inciting. Raskin summed it all up with one line.
That's a high crime and misdemeanor. If that's not an impeachable offense, then there is no such thing.
Oh, but he said a whole lot more than that. Jamie Raskin was, in a word, brilliant. Much of the nation cried along with him as he explained that his daughter and son-in-law accompanied him to the Capitol on January 6th, just one day after they buried his son, who had committed suicide on New Year's Eve. Raskin tearfully recalled the terror and bloodshed of that day.
My youngest daughter, Tabitha, was there with me on Wednesday, January 6th. It was the day after we buried her brother, our son, Tommy, the saddest day of our lives. Also, there was my son-in-law, Hank, who's married to our oldest daughter, Hannah, and I consider him a son, too, even though he eloped with my daughter and didn't tell us what they were going to do. But it was in the middle of COVID-19. But the reason they came with me that Wednesday, January 6th, was because they wanted to be together with me in the middle of a devastating week for our family. And I invited them instead to come with me to witness this historic event, the peaceful transfer of power in America. And they said they heard that President Trump was calling on his followers to come to Washington to protest, and they asked me directly, would it be safe? Would it be safe? And I told them, of course it should be safe. This is the Capitol. Tabitha and Hank came with me to the floor, and they watched it from the gallery. And it was when it was over, they went back to Steny's office off of the House floor. They didn't know that the House had been breached yet and that an insurrection, a riot, or a coup had come to Congress. And by the time we learned about it, about what was going on, it was too late. I couldn't get out there to be with them. And then there was a sound I will never forget. The sound of pounding on the door like a battering ram. The most haunting sound I ever heard, and I will never forget it. My chief of staff, Julie Tagan, was with Tabitha and Hank, locked and barricaded in that office. The kids hiding under the desk, placing what they thought were their final texts and whispered phone calls to say their goodbyes. They thought they were going to die. And when they were finally rescued over an hour later by Capitol officers and we were together, I hugged them and I apologized. I told her how sorry I was, and I promised her that it would not be like this again the next time she came back to the Capitol with me. And you know what she said? She said, "Dad, I don't want to come back to the Capitol." Of all the terrible, brutal things I saw and I heard on that day, and since then, that one hit me the hardest. That and watching someone use an American flagpole with the flag still on it to spear and pummel one of our police officers ruthlessly, mercilessly, tortured by a pole with a flag on it that he was defending with his senators. This cannot be our future. This cannot be the future of America. We cannot have presidents inciting and mobilizing mob violence against our government and our institutions because they refuse to accept the will of the people under the Constitution of the United States.
Trump's lawyers responded by claiming that Democrats were trying to disenfranchise Trump voters. Well, as is the case in opposite world, they're projecting, as it was Trump himself who literally attempted to disenfranchise 81 million Biden voters. But that was only one of many stumbles by the defense. Trump's lead attorney, Bruce Castor, was rambling and disjointed and drew criticism from Republican senators and Trump himself.
You know, it's funny. This is an aside, but it's funny. You ever notice how when you're talking or you hear others talking about you, when you're home in your state, they will say, you know, I talked to my senator, or I talked to somebody on the staff of my senator. It's always my senator. Why is it that we say my senator? We say that because the people you represent are proud of their senators.
But if you thought Castor was bad, he was only the opening act for David Schoen, who sounded as if he was actually threatening civil war if the trial were to proceed.
If you endorse it by going forward with this impeachment trial, this is an untenable combination that literally puts the institution of the presidency directly at risk. Nothing less. Every civil officer who has served is at risk of impeachment, now deserves to be canceled.
And reports say Trump was not happy as he was watching from Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, Florida. At one point, Newsmax cut away from Trump's lawyer's argument to talk with Alan Dershowitz, who represented Trump in his first impeachment trial. Dershowitz said Trump did not appear to be getting, quote, effective advocacy from his legal team, you think? Meanwhile, Congress and the Biden administration have a lot on their plates besides the impeachment trial. A key House committee has proposed a bill for the stimulus package that would make more people eligible for the Affordable Care Act subsidies for 2 years, fulfilling Biden's campaign promise to expand health care options. And his cabinet picks are also progressing. Finally, Attorney General nominee Merrick Garland has a date for a confirmation hearing. That'll happen on February 22nd. And Neera Tanden's confirmation hearing to be director of the Office of Management and Budget is in day two in the morning before impeachment work begins at noon. And interestingly enough, her tweets have been questioned. Now, her tweets have been offensive, but remember who sat in the White House for 4 years? Who tweeted incessantly? Yeah. Double standard much? Day two of the impeachment trial gets underway at 12 noon on Wednesday, and Democrats say they'll show new security footage of the mob attack on the Capitol. I don't know how they can top the video that they showed on Tuesday, but I guess we'll find out on Wednesday. Stay tuned. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports, I hope you'll check out the Nicole Sandler Show, which airs live right here on the Progressive Voices Network weekdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 Pacific. And if you miss it live, you can always pick up the podcast at NicoleSandler.com.